This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Israeli War Cabinet centrist member Benny Gantz has resigned. AP correspondent Karen Shamas tells us more.
The move does not immediately pose a threat to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who still controls a majority coalition in Parliament. But the Israeli leader will now become more heavily reliant on his far-right allies to stay in power. Gantz had previously said he would leave the government by June the 8th if Netanyahu did not formulate a new plan for post-war Gaza. The popular former military chief joined Netanyahu's government shortly after October the 7th in a show of unity. His presence also boosted Israel's credibility with its international partners. Gantz has good working relations with U.S. officials. I'm Karen Chavez.
Israel freed four hostages over the weekend in a raid on a refugee camp in Gaza. Details from VOA's Arash Arabasadi.
It was the largest hostage recovery operation since the beginning of the war late last year. As a freed hostage arrived at a medical facility in Tel Aviv, people sang in Hebrew, "The people of Israel are alive." It's a stark contrast to the Nusrat refugee camp in Gaza, where the Israeli operation left more than 270 Palestinians dead, according to the Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
The director of the UN World Food Program said Sunday the program has paused its distribution of humanitarian aid from an American-built pier off Gaza, saying that she was concerned about the safety of the people after what had been one of the deadliest days of the war there. Saturday saw both an Israeli military assault that freed four hostages but left 274 Palestinians and one Israeli commando dead. And Cindy McCain said two of WFP's warehouses in Gaza had been rocketed and a staffer injured. Sunday's UN announcement of the pause appears a latest setback for the USC route set up to try to bring more food and aid into Gaza's starving people. This is VOA News. Ukraine on Sunday said its forces hit an ultra-modern Russian warplane stationed on an airbase nearly 600 kilometers from the front lines. Kyiv's main military intelligence service shared satellite photos that showed the aftermath of the attack. If confirmed, it would mark Ukraine's first known successful strike on a twin-engine Su-57 stealth jet, lauded as Moscow's most advanced fighter plane. In one photo, black soot marks and small craters can be seen dotting a concrete strip around the parked aircraft. According to the main intelligence directorate of Ukraine's Ministry of Defense, the strike took place on Saturday at a base in southern Russia, some 589 kilometers from the front line. In a shocking move, French President Emmanuel Macron on Sunday said he would dissolve Parliament and call new legislative elections later in the month after he was trounced in the European elections by Marine Le Pen's far-right party.
Après avoir procédé aux consultations prévues à l'article 12 de notre Constitution.
Macron said the results were a disaster for his government and one he could not pretend to ignore. In a high-risk political gamble less than 2 months before Paris hosts the Olympics, he said lower house elections will be called for June 30th with a second round vote on July 7th. Macron's widely unexpected decision could leave him in nearly powerless position if Le Pen's National Rally Party wins a parliamentary majority. U.S. President Joe Biden's son Hunter and the Biden family are weathering the public airing of Hunter's drug addiction as the federal court trial resumes Monday. AP correspondent Julie Walker with more.
Hunter Biden's family, including his mother, the First Lady, has gone to great lengths to support him as he stands trial for lying on a federal gun purchase from when he said he did not have a drug problem. Jill Biden has been a regular presence in the federal courtroom in Delaware, and other family members have attended. Every family wrestles with personal challenges, whether they're famous or not. But the airing in open court of tawdry details surrounding Hunter Biden's addiction is an order of greater magnitude, and it's happening in the glare of an election year. I'm Julie Walker.
New Zealand Prime Minister Christopher Luxon said on Monday that China's premier, Liu Xiang, would visit the country later in the week in the first trip to the nation in 7 years by a Chinese premier. Luxon said in a statement he looked forward to the warm welcoming in New Zealand and that the visit would be a valuable opportunity for exchanges on areas of cooperation between the two countries. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
election.
Populist far-right parties have won record support this year, and that the center-right also gained.
Benny Gantz, a centrist member of Israel's three-man war cabinet, announces his resignation.
The move does not immediately pose a threat to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, but the Israeli leader will now become more heavily reliant on his far-right allies to stay in power.
And new bicyclists ride through London and Mexico City in protest of car culture.
This ride is a protest. Its purpose is to raise public awareness.
Today is Monday, June 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman.
Forces from the outside and from the inside are trying to destabilize our societies, and they are trying to weaken Europe. We will never let that happen.
Far-right parties made significant gains in the EU parliamentary elections, making the biggest percentage gains. But the center-right held, with the biggest winner being the center-right European People's Party. A centralized exit poll showing the EPP gaining 5 seats to field 181 deputies, which is good news for EU President Ursula von der Leyen, who seeks a second 5-year term at the helm of the powerful EU executive arm.
The center is holding. But it is also true that the extremes on the left and on the right have gained support. And this is why the result comes with great responsibility for the parties in the center. We may differ on individual points, but we all have an interest in stability, and we all want a strong and effective Europe.
Von der Leyen may still need support from some of the right-wing nationalists, like Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni's Brothers of Italy, to secure a parliamentary majority, given Meloni and her European conservative and reformist allies having more leverage.
So throughout my campaign, I've been working hard to build a broad and effective majority of pro-European forces. My aim is to continue on this path with those who are pro-European, pro-Ukraine, pro-rule of law. And as of tomorrow, this work starts again.
In France, anti-far-right protesters gathered in Paris Sunday after French President Macron said the EU result was grim for his government and one that he could not ignore. Macron rolled the dice on his political future, calling snap legislative elections for later this month, after he was trounced in the EU vote by Marine Le Pen's far-right party.
Cette décision est grave.
He's saying this decision is serious, a hard one, but it is above all an act of confidence, confidence in you, my fellow citizens, in the capacity of the French people to make the fairest choice for themselves and for future generations. So let's dig into this. Joining us now to talk about it is Matt Klink from Klink Campaigns. Matt has more than 30 years' experience working for corporate and political clients in more than 35 countries on 6 continents. So let's start at the very top. What are we looking at in Europe with this election right now?
So it's important, I think, for everyone to remember that these are elections for the European Union. They happen in the 29 countries across the European Union. They space them out over 3 days, and these will be the representatives in the EU Parliament. The elections they end today. The results are not final, but we do know that the populist far-right parties have won record support this year. Through early exit polls, while these parties made gains, some of the more liberal or progressive parties certainly did not, and that the center-right also gained. which is referred to as the European People's Party. And they are likely to have the most seats in the European Parliament in the future. And it will just change the way the EU does business. It will be much more populist and much more right than it will be left.
The People's Party is von der Leyen's party, and you are right. They're going to take the most of the seats in the parliament, the center-right. So she now has to balance. Does she have to shift at all, change, build a coalition?
Well, it's essential for any European country politics, but definitely for the EU Parliament. Definitely, she'll have to make a broad-based coalition. It will be interesting because the far-right identity and democracy groups made major gains. And I know that some other center and center-left parties, they likely won't even want to be in the same government if the far right is included. But it will be very, very difficult to exclude the far right identity and democracy groups from government because of their strong showing.
Yeah, one of the groups that lost is the Green Party. Significant losses.
Yes.
Devastating losses. And as we start to look at the exit polling, we can see that there was a huge youth. They depended on a youth vote, and that youth vote shifted heavily to the right.
Yes. Look, I think that the biggest challenge that the Greens have, also the European Free Alliance, is a lot of the climate change policies that they propose. They come with a cost, and those costs are starting to be realized. And I don't think that the globalism that has been preached by the EU for so long is resonating with young people. Young people are struggling. They worry about the ability to you know, what their quality of life is going to look like, their ability to have a home in the future. And I think that the Greens are now obviously a very mature party. They're going to have to start to modify their messaging if they don't want to continue to lose seats.
It's not unlike here in the United States, where when the economy is good and life is good, you have the luxury to think about things like climate. But when migration is a number one issue and inflation is still bad, you're right, I think, right? As a voter, you have to start thinking about something else.
Yeah, the pocketbook issues reign supreme. And when quality, what do a dozen eggs cost? And, you know, or can I still get the food that I want to feed my family? And can I get diapers for my baby? These are decisions that are made around the kitchen room table, that we make them in Los Angeles or in Des Moines, Iowa. You know, these same conversations are occurring in Munich and in Paris and in small little towns all throughout the European Union. And that is a struggle that they are, you know, look, these elections speak highly that the right-wing populists, they come in and they promise that they will step up more for the local community and for the local country, and they will have to balance the needs of broader Europe with the country-specific issues that are important. And I just think that Europe is going to, like the rest of the world, Europe is going through some growing pains right now with the EU Parliament. And look, these results, it will all work itself out all right, but it's just not going to, I think the status quo is in jeopardy, and I think that scares some people.
The big surprise was France. Macron, I guess, decided the events were so heavy against him that he took the extraordinary measure of calling for a vote in his own Parliament on the 30th of June and 7th of July. That's a big risk, right, for him?
It is. And, I mean, thankfully he has run against a far right in France that has been disjointed and has said some incredibly hurtful and bigoted things in the past. But, the right-wing populists are getting more sophisticated. They're running better candidates. And for Macron, who clearly feels vulnerable. We look at the strikes that they've had with the farmers driving around in their trucks and in their farm equipment, shutting down major parts of cities in France. He knows that things are not going well. And, you know, again, they're a country that has embraced all things green. And when energy starts costing more and the food you buy is more expensive because energy is more expensive, people are looking at this through a much different lens than they were four years ago.
All right. Thank you so much for the time.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Matt Klink from Klink Campaigns. Big news from Israel. That's Israeli Minister Benny Gantz announcing his resignation from Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's emergency government on Sunday, withdrawing the only centrist power in Netanyahu's far-right coalition, or war cabinet, as it's been called. Gantz said, regrettably, Netanyahu is preventing us from advancing toward true victory, which is the justification for the ongoing and painful cost of war. He said, that's why we're leaving the emergency government with a heavy heart, but with full confidence. Israel freed 4 hostages over the weekend in a raid on a refugee camp in Gaza. The Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry said Israel forces killed at least 274 Palestinians in the operation. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has this part of the story.
The Israel Defense Forces released a video claiming to show the freeing of hostages kidnapped by Hamas in the October 7th terror attacks. VOA cannot independently verify this or other IDF footage. It was the largest hostage recovery operation since the beginning of the war late last year. As a freed hostage arrived at a medical facility in Tel Aviv, people sang in Hebrew, "The people of Israel are alive." It's a stark contrast to the Nusrat refugee camp in Gaza, where the Israeli operation left more than 270 Palestinians dead, according to the Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry. That included airstrikes that leveled parts of the camp just days after Israeli troops pummeled a school-turned shelter, according to local health officials. Retired Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner, Israel Defense Forces spokesperson, speaking on ABC's This Week as provided by social media platform X.
The tragedy of civilians being caught up in this is precisely because of how Hamas is battling us on the battleground. Our responsibility, our first and foremost responsibility, is to rescue the hostages, to bring them home, to create a better security situation for Israelis, and I would say for Palestinians alike.
As the Israel Defense Forces continue sweeps in Gaza, claiming to seize stockpiles of weapons, its staunchest ally, the United States, says this conflict could end right now if Hamas agreed to a ceasefire. Meanwhile, weekly protests of the government of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu continued, with people calling for elections to replace him and a deal to release the remaining hostages. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is set to visit the region this week for another attempt at brokering a ceasefire to bring an end to the conflict. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Following these other stories from around the world, the death toll has risen to 41 following an attack on Friday by suspected Islamist rebels on a village in eastern Congo. A Congolese army spokesperson said that brings the total toll in the region to more than 80 since Tuesday. Ukraine on Sunday said its forces hit an ultra-modern Russia warplane stationed on an airbase about 600 kilometers from the front lines. U.S. President Joe Biden closed out his trip to France by paying his respects at an American military cemetery that Donald Trump notably skipped when he was president, hoping his final stop Sunday helped draw the stakes of the November election in stark relief. In our continuing coverage of the 2024 U.S. presidential election, June is Pride Month. And as events start up all over the world, this note: The number of adults in the United States identifying as something other than heterosexual is holding steady at about 7.2%. And the two presidential candidates are taking note. VOA Senior Washington correspondent Carolyn Pursuti tells us how they're trying to attract that population.
Gallup estimates that a little more than 7% of American adults are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or questioning their sexuality, known as LGBTQ. That group protested a 2017 Twitter announcement by then-President Donald Trump that barred transgender people from serving in the military. Less than a week into his presidency, Joe Biden overturned the ban.
Transgender personnel, if qualified in every other way, can serve their government in the United States military.
Sarah Kate Ellis is president and CEO of GLAAD, an LGBTQ organization.
It is quite a relief to have an administration that understands who we are and values us as American citizens.
Also during his term, President Joe Biden signed the Respect for Marriage Act, which gave federal rights and benefits to same-sex couples. Here's what he said to the LGBTQ community during a White House event.
You are loved. You are heard. You are understood. And you belong.
Randy Bravo says he will vote for Biden.
As a gay man, you know, a lot of my rights with the other parties can be in jeopardy. So part of the reason why I do support Biden this term, and I did support him last term as well, was because of what he stands for.
Former President Donald Trump was the first president to appoint an openly gay cabinet official. But he has taken an overall more conservative stance. He has said God created two genders, male and female.
What is with pronouns? If you really study it and look at it, it's sick. It's sick. I will protect the content that is pro-God. We're going to protect pro-God context and content.
It's a narrative that his voters stand behind. Like Thomas Isbell, who attended a Trump rally in Ohio.
The Republican sidelines more so with what the Bible says in terms of eliminating abortion, in terms of getting rid of the LGBTQ.
President Biden has condemned conservative state laws restricting gender-affirming surgery and classes on sexual orientation. Former President Trump promised this on his campaign website.
On day one, I will revoke Joe Biden's cruel policies on so-called gender-affirming care. Ridiculous. A process that includes giving kids puberty blockers, mutating their physical appearance, and ultimately performing surgery on minor children.
Democratic advisor Brad Woodhouse says this is the traditional Republican Party that Republican voters want.
They're anti-immigrant, they're anti-transgender, they're anti-gay, and Trump knew that. He took that. He held on to it.
These voters helped Biden win swing states in 2020. A poll by the advocacy group GLAAD shows the same strong support for Biden, but they overwhelmingly urge the Republican Party to focus on the economy rather than restricting their rights. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News.
South Korea resumed loudspeaker broadcast directed at North Korea on Sunday. The South Korean military says it's following through on a warning demanding Pyongyang stop sending balloons carrying trash and feces into the South. Here's Reuters correspondent Olivia Chan with more.
In a video provided by the military on Sunday, trucks were shown carrying loudspeakers and soldiers assembling them in a training exercise. The military said it was the first such training since 2018. The location and date of the training were not disclosed. The decision to resume the broadcasts as a form of psychological warfare was made after North Korea began launching about 330 balloons with trash attached a day before, with about 80 of them dropping over the border. That's according to South Korea's military. South Korea's broadcasts include world news and information about democratic and capitalist society, with a mix of popular K-pop music. The sound is believed to travel more than 12 miles into North Korea. Kim Seok-kyung is a presidential spokesperson.
The measures we will take may be unbearable for the North Korean regime, but they will send a message of hope and light to the North's troops and its people.
Pyongyang started sending balloons carrying trash and manure across the border in May. It has said the move was in retaliation for anti-North leaflets flown by South Korean activists as part of a propaganda campaign. North Korea has shown some of the angriest reactions towards the leaflet campaign and the loudspeaker broadcasts, in some cases, firing weapons at the balloons and speakers. South Korea stopped the broadcasts under an agreement signed by the two Korea's leaders in 2018, but tensions have mounted since then as Pyongyang pushed ahead with weapons development.
Reuters correspondent Olivia Chow. Cyclists rode through London and Mexico City streets on their bikes to protest car culture and to demand rights for cyclists.
This ride is a protest. Its purpose is to raise public awareness about the use of hydrocarbons and how fragile a cyclist's body is when you share the road.
Nude cyclists have gathered globally since 2004, making this the 20th anniversary of the Naked Protest Ride. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for being with us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at our website, voanews.com. We also have apps you can download from Apple and Google. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On May 27th, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, or North Korea, launched a new type of satellite carrier rocket with a spy satellite aboard. 2 days later, North Korea fired off 10 short-range ballistic missiles. The May 27 launch failed. Nonetheless, it was still a success in that it served as a test of North Korea's latest long-range missile technology. This is yet another instance of violation of United Nations resolutions and a grave threat to peace and denuclearization on the Korean Peninsula. The United States condemns in the strongest possible terms the Democratic People's Republic of Korea's May 27th and May 29th launches, said Robert Wood, United States Alternative Representative for Special Political Affairs at the United Nations. The UN Security Council has repeatedly called on the DPRK to cease its unlawful weapons program and engage in diplomacy, he said.
Yet the DPRK has continued to advance its unlawful weapons program at an alarming rate, having launched well over 100 ballistic missiles since the beginning of 2022. Each of these launches, successful or not, is a flagrant violation of UN Security Council resolutions. Each launch informs the DPRK of its capability gaps and allows Pyongyang to further advance its weapons programs.
Attempts by the UN Security Council to condemn North Korea and hold it accountable for these violations are being blocked by Russia and China. Russia has also vetoed the reauthorization of a panel of UN experts on sanctions against the DPRK. Coincidentally, North Korea has unlawfully transferred dozens of ballistic missiles and over 11,000 containers of munitions to aid Russia's war against Ukraine, said Ambassador Wood.
No wonder Russia vetoed the 17-18 Committee Panel of Experts mandate renewal in March. Moscow didn't want further scrutiny on its sanctions violating activities with the DPRK. Russia's veto denies all UN member states of objective, comprehensive reporting and analysis on the compliance of UN sanctions on the DPRK, all of which remain in effect.
The overwhelming majority of this council has consistently condemned the DPRK's intensifying threat to international peace and security, is fully committed to upholding the Security Council resolutions, and has recommitted to our shared goal of denuclearization as fundamental to this effort, said Ambassador Wood. It is time to voice a united and clear denunciation of the DPRK's behavior and work together to prevent the DPRK's procurement activities and revenue flows those which support its unlawful weapons of mass destruction and ballistic missile programs.
That was an editorial.